I'm Gene Pasale, and this is Living History. This show explores the rich heritage of the Brandywine Valley outside Philadelphia, focusing on the people, places, and events over more than 300 years which have played an important part in our American heritage. Each show highlights a local town, event, or personality who's had a notable influence on our culture. And before we get started, I want to mention that our call-in line, if you have questions or comments, is 610-701-9243. That's 610-701-9243. This day in history, November 30th. On this day in 1776, the Howe brothers, British General William Howe and Admiral Richard Howe, offer amnesty to all citizens in the 13 colonies if they surrender and lay down their arms in the open rebellion against the King of England. The Howes would later be considered somewhat sympathetic to the American cause, and some historians have viewed their lack of aggressive actions to completely crush the rebellion as one explanation of why the colonies were successful in gaining independence. In 1835, Samuel Langhorne Clemens, a man who would change the world of literature as Mark Twain, is born in Missouri. Twain worked as a riverboat captain and took on the nickname because of the term used to indicate the depth of water along which riverboats pursued their course. He wrote for various newspapers before publishing what became his masterpieces about life on the Mississippi River, Tom Sawyer, and later Huckleberry Finn. A subsequent author, Ernest Hemingway, once honored Twain by saying, "All of American literature began with a book called Huckleberry Finn." And in 1950, during the early years of the Cold War, President Harry Truman holds a press conference announcing that he will not rule out the use of the atomic bomb against Chinese and North Korean troops who had brutally attacked and overrun South Korean forces during the Korean War. The Industrial Revolution proceeded partly because of one major new technology that transformed the landscape, not only here in America, but around the world: the locomotive. Beginning with inventions in the early 1800s in Great Britain, the locomotive proved itself to be a superior mechanism to transport massive amounts of heavy commodities over long distances. Railroads took hold in America beginning in the 1830s, with the Baltimore and Ohio, and subsequently others, including the Pennsylvania Railroad, which became one of the major lines running throughout the northeastern United States. The Pennsylvania Railroad became so dominant, numerous stations were named Penn Station, including ones in New York and Philadelphia, both major transportation hubs. The Pennsylvania Railroad Museum in Strasburg, PA, showcases dozens of locomotives, equipment, and other artifacts of the Golden Age of railroads. The museum has numerous exhibits highlighting the long history of railroads, their influence on business, and on life in general in the United States. The museum is not only for railroad buffs. Anyone interested in learning about this hugely important industry will be thrilled seeing the many displays they showcase. Pat Morrison is the museum educator at the Pennsylvania Railroad Museum, and he's here with us to talk about the events and activities they have there. Pat, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Gene.
How long has the Pennsylvania Railroad Museum been open? What are its origins?
We opened to the public officially in April of 1975. But the origins of the Railroad Museum go back much further. In the mid-1960s, the state of Pennsylvania endeavored to establish a rail transportation museum in the Commonwealth, and it was their foresight that allowed the Railroad Museum of Pennsylvania, as we know it today, to be established. It took some time, some doing. They had several cities in Pennsylvania that they were looking, you know, in terms of establishing a museum, and the location in Strasburg won out because of it, well, for a couple of reasons. Certainly being in Pennsylvania Amish country doesn't hurt matters, but we're also certainly near the original Philadelphia and Columbia Railroad, which was the first double-track railroad in the United States, and certainly one of the earlier railroads in the United States. So there are many, many reasons for why this area was chosen, but certainly looking back on it in the past 40 more than 40 years now. It was a very wise decision, given the 120,000 visitors we receive each year. So that was the origins of the Railroad Museum, and we're still going strong more than 40 years later.
That's great. So I guess last year you celebrated your 40th anniversary.
Correct.
And you're located in Strasburg, PA. How do visitors get there? What's your street address?
It's 300 Gap Road, Strasburg, PA. We were located on 741 East, just east of Strasburg, Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm. I live in Kennett Square, so I think you're almost directly north of me. And if people are coming from the Philadelphia area, it would be kind of west-northwest.
Correct.
Of downtown Philadelphia. Many people are not familiar with the development of the locomotive engine, which was a major breakthrough in transportation. Can you give us just a brief summary of the development of locomotives and why they're so important?
Sure. You know, steam locomotives themselves go back to around 1804 when Richard Trevithick developed a first prototype of a steam locomotive in England. In this country, it took a little while for that to really take off, the concept to take off. There were many people in this country tinkering with the idea, people like John Stevens, people of sort of an engineering background like that. But we were about 20 years behind England in terms of locomotive production. And in fact, a lot of our early railroads got their start using locomotives that were built and imported from England. So it took a little while for this country to develop steam locomotives, but once we did, it really took off. Certainly, the distances are greater, the terrain is steeper in many places than in other parts of the world. So once the locomotive was able to really establish itself here in this country, they were able to adapt the design of locomotives to a variety of terrain and different types of tracks. So certainly by 1829, we had the Sturbridge Lion, which was the first locomotive to lay its wheels on track here in the United States, or in Pennsylvania, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And from the Sturbridge Lion, other railroads started acquiring and building locomotives, and Pennsylvania became a very important location for some early locomotive manufacturing, like the Norris Brothers in Philadelphia, and eventually the Baldwin Locomotive Works, which became world-renowned in the late 19th century, for about 100 years, actually, developing steam locomotives for import and export around the world. So Pennsylvania has always had kind of an important relationship and role in railroad development, but also locomotive development.
Mm-hmm. Now, the term iron horse was given to the locomotives because of the enormous power that they held, and the ability to move huge loads of commodities, bulk commodities generally, at relatively low cost. Can you tell us about the breakdown between what the early railroads were doing? I mean, were they mostly just transporting commodities?
Well, interestingly enough, you know, the earliest locomotives were not locomotives. The earliest things to pull trains were horses. Until the steam locomotive was developed, and until it reached its, you know, capacity in terms of design, until it had reached a good design that they could rely upon. And originally, most railroads in this country, especially in this part of the country, had a purpose in mind, and that purpose was to deliver coal from a mine to a place where it could be used or processed or sold. The whole passenger end of things really was kind of a byproduct of all of that discussion and talk. But originally there was a very strong economic reason for developing railroads, and that was to get a product from a raw material from a mine or the forests to a place where it could be used. So the first railroads that developed in Pennsylvania were just that, were an outgrowth of the mining industry, or an outgrowth of the technology that was existing at the time, which were canals, and certainly became eventually the competition for all other forms of transportation.
Sure. Now, the Pennsylvania Railroad was one of the most important in the nation for many decades.
Absolutely.
Tell us just a little bit about its history and what you showcase there at the museum.
Sure. Well, that's certainly not the only railroad that we focus on, but definitely the biggest that we focus our attention on. Well, the Philadelphia and Columbia Railroad was kind of the immediate predecessor of that, but it was state-funded. It was state-developed. And it ran until about 1857 when it was taken over, purchased at public auction for $7.5 million by the Pennsylvania Railroad.
Now, Columbia, wasn't that a town near the Susquehanna, kind of
exactly.
Up to the northwest?
Yeah, and it was a canal basin. It was a canal port.
Mm-hmm.
It was the other end of the Philadelphia and Columbia Railroad,
mm-hmm.
Which, as I said, was the first, not the first railroad, but the first double-track railroad in the United States.
Now, double-track, explain what you mean by that.
Well, originally, when they built railroad tracks, they literally built a track. And if you want to have railroads, if you want to have trains operating on that same track, you had a problem. You had to figure out how to get trains to be able to go around each other,
mm-hmm.
or you had to install side tracks or sidings where they could back up and wait until another train passed. So the Philadelphia and Columbia Railroad built a second track that allowed trains to pass one another. You could have an eastbound track, and you could have a westbound track.
Mm-hmm.
And more or less, most railroads have adopted that kind of a philosophy. Certainly makes it much easier. But that was basically a state-funded enterprise. The Pennsylvania mm-hmm. Railroad, on the other hand, was more or less the opposite approach. They established, or they got a charter, residents of Philadelphia, particularly merchants in Philadelphia, who established the Pennsylvania Railroad, worked to get a charter passed through the legislature to establish the Pennsylvania Railroad, which they did in 1846.
Okay.
Then they went back to Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, respectively, and they raised money. And instead of it being largely state-funded, it was more or less a kind of a 50-50 proposition between shareholders, stockholders, and municipal funding. So they were able to establish and start this railroad. And they did it about a year later. They started building it in the summer of 1847.
Excellent. Now, we're gonna take a brief break.
Sure.
But stay with us. We're talking with Pat Morrison of the Pennsylvania Railroad Museum. We'll be right back with Living History.
Do you have a wedding, graduation, baptism, confirmation, milestone, or birthday to plan? You need John Surratt Catering, one of the most highly rated and preferred caterers throughout the Philadelphia area. They will be there to create and cater your event while assisting as much or as little as you desire. Planning a decadent, over-the-top company gala? Need help transforming your backyard into the party of the year? Want to wow your clients with a delicious luncheon? Then you need John Surratt Catering. All you have to do is call and they'll handle the rest. Located at 835 Lincoln Avenue in Westchester, visit them at SurrockCatering.com or call 610-640-2836. That's 610-640-2836.
If you had to choose a roofer, would you choose one with limited experience and knowledge, or would you choose a roofer certified as a master elite contractor by the largest manufacturer in the nation, GAF, a distinction shared by only 3% of the nation's roofers? I'm talking about GP Martini Roofing, who also does siding, windows, doors, and offers an ironclad guarantee that he'll repair or replace any roof for defects within its normal life. GP Martini Services, Chester, Delaware, Bucks, and Montgomery counties, with free estimates and consultation, and does both commercial and residential. Go to their website at martiniroofing.com for special savings, or call 610-873-1696. And also, financing is available with no payments for a full year. Now, what roofer would you call? GP Martini is the answer. 610-873-1696.
This is the Talk of Chester County, 1520 WCHE.
I'm Gene Pasale, and this is Living History. Today we're speaking with Pat Morrison, the museum educator at the Pennsylvania Railroad Museum in Strasburg, PA. Pat, you know, for years I've wondered, there seem to be a lot of Penn stations. I know there's at least one in New York, one in Philadelphia. How did that happen? Was the Pennsylvania Railroad so dominant that it built Penn stations all around the region?
Well, most railroads built their own stations, but some shared stations, what we call union stations. So there were some places where there was one principal station that was shared by many railroads. Now, there are some stations that were union station in name only. Pittsburgh's station, for example, for a time was called Union Station, even though really the only railroad that used it was the Pennsylvania Railroad and any subsidiaries that it had at that time. But yeah, most railroads that were, or most stations that were owned and operated by the Pennsylvania Railroad could almost claim themselves a Pennsylvania station.
Mm-hmm, like the big Penn Station in New York.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. But of course, that sort of gives you the idea that the Pennsylvania Railroad was the only railroad that used that particular station. Even Harrisburg Station could be called Pennsylvania Station. For a time, it was.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, interestingly enough, for a period of time, other railroads used that station until they built their own. So,
now, when was the heyday of the Pennsylvania Railroad? When was it kind of at its peak, so to speak?
It was at its peak about 100 years ago. 1916, of course, was sort of the peak of railroad construction in the entire country. This state alone had 11,500 miles of track. And at its peak, that time, the Pennsylvania Railroad was, certainly by the 1880s, it was the largest publicly traded corporation in the world. And by 1914, it had a massive labor pool of about 280,000 people. That doubled the size of the army at the time. And its budget was larger than the federal government. So it was a massive corporation. And that was 100 years ago.
That's enormous. I did not realize the scope of the Pennsylvania. I knew it was large. So it was by far the largest railroad in the United States, correct?
At that time, correct. Yeah, up until about, I would say, the 1920s. And then things really started to change, and it would be a gradual change. You would start to see the influence of the automobile industry and then eventually the airline industry. But that took some time. For about 100 years, from about 1846 to 1946, the Pennsylvania Railroad paid dividends every year. But 1946 was the last year. It was the year that started to change.
Now, I don't know its current status. Is it now just a private entity? It doesn't trade stock?
From my understanding, what's left of it, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, what we have today is essentially several big railroads and many, many, many smaller railroads, but nothing like we had in the past.
When people come to the museum, can they actually ride on a real locomotive?
Directly across the road from us is the Strasburg Railroad, and they are a for-profit tourist railroad. Wonderful place, an excellent ride for folks if they come to the area. And then at the museum itself, in our building and outside of our building as well, as part of this whole property, we have over 100 pieces of full-size railroad equipment. So they'll be able to see vintage trains going all the way back. Our oldest passenger car was built in 1855. Our newest locomotive in our collection was built in 1981. So you have everywhere in between.
Now, when people come there, do you have programs or activities for children?
We actually do every day in our education, what we call Stewart Junction. It's more or less our hands-on, family-oriented exhibit area. And any time that a visitor comes here, they have access to that as well as part of their admission. We do offer special events throughout the year. Many of these events are family-oriented. Most of them will have a railroad connection or theme of some kind. So it's a very wonderful place to visit, and we certainly encourage your listeners to do that.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I was there several years ago, and I want to go back. I do know that you have some kind of a Christmas event there.
We do.
Can tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, this Saturday, which is December 3rd, and Saturday, December 10th, we have an event. It's kind of a twofer in a way. It's called Christmas with the Conductor, but it's also home for the holidays. And we still have openings in our Christmas with the Conductor parties, which are 11, 1, and 3 of each of those Saturdays. Mm-hmm. And it's just a wonderful day to come out and see the place all decorated. The kids can see Santa. We have music. It's a nice venue to experience the holidays.
Excellent.
The holidays.
I'd like to check it out. Now you mentioned you've got some old rolling stock, I guess is what you way you term it. Do you say the oldest one is around 1855, or do you have any older?
Correct. We have replicas that represent time periods older than that.
Mm-hmm.
The John Bull and the John Stevens are two locomotives that we have built in 1831 and 1825, respectively. Now, they're replicas.
Mm-hmm.
They were built in 1940.
I see.
But they represent a period a century earlier. So mm-hmm. we do have a couple of pieces that would, if they were the originals, be older than that. But because they're replicas, we certainly don't refer to them as our oldest piece.
Sure. Now, many different types of locomotives, of course, have been used over the decades. Can you tell us maybe just about a couple of the more famous locomotive engines used?
Probably the most popular one that we get asked a lot about is our GG1s. We have... Mm-hmm. It's an electric locomotive, passenger locomotive primarily,
mm-hmm.
although in the late 50s, many of them were converted to freight. That's probably our most iconic electric locomotive.
Mm-hmm.
We have the prototype, what they commonly refer to as old rivets or rivets. And then we also have one of the last ones to be built, 4935. Of course, if you want to go steam, the K4, the Pennsylvania Railroad's 462 K4 steam locomotive is probably one of the more iconic Pennsylvania Railroad steamers. And we just completed the restoration of a 442 Atlantic, number 460. It's inside the building. Visitors can come and see the latest project in our collection.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of gives folks an idea as to the kind of work that we do in our restoration shop here at the museum.
Mm-hmm. I know the GG1 was considered, a real workhorse for many years.
Right.
In fact, my wife's father, who passed away several years ago before we were married, he was a big railroad fan, and he loved the GG1. In fact, he even had his kind of the symbol for his private company, GG1. And that was a very well-known locomotive. You lead me to another question related
okay.
to old locomotives, and that is, are there any locomotives still running on steam?
The only places you can actually do that, of course, the Strasburg Railroad is one example, mostly tourist railroads.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the world over, I would say it's mostly tourist railroads. That have taken the time to, and the money, the tremendous resources to restore these locomotives to operate mainly for recreation, but certainly mm-hmm. to help preserve that history.
Other than that, they're all electric, is that right?
Either electric or diesel electric.
Diesel,
correct.
Okay, yeah. I say diesel.
Those are our two main forms of motive power today.
Which is more common, diesel or electric?
I would say diesels.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with electrics, going back to the very beginning, is the tremendous infrastructure involved
mm-hmm.
in running them. You have
sure.
to have overhead wires or a
sure.
third rail of some kind to run them.
Absolutely. I understand that people can kind of walk through history there at the Pennsylvania Railroad Museum. Just tell us a little bit about some of your historical displays there.
Yeah, it's actually kind of an exciting time for us. We're actually in the process of redesigning many of our exhibits. But it certainly looks wonderful now. We actually had the building set up, and you can walk up and down the aisles and look at these. We have them set up almost as complete trains. In some cases, we have a 1880s and 90s, turn of the century passenger train with wooden coaches. Mm. We have a World War II era passenger train pulled by a GG-1. We have a couple of freight trains on display, including a kind of a peddler freight, local freight you might have seen in the 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
So in addition to just having a car here or an engine there, we actually have a few of them set up as a complete train.
Excellent. Now, I think I hinted at this earlier, but in terms of the Pennsylvania Railroad and other regional railroads, especially the ones that came later like Norfolk Southern or
right.
Union Pacific, how does Pennsylvania Railroad rank in terms of the overall stature, I should say,
sure.
of these huge names that just about everybody has heard of? I obviously, at one point, Pennsylvania Railroad was the biggest, but you know, ones like Norfolk Southern and others have kind of become much larger in the last 30,
yeah.
40, 50 years.
Well, the last time I checked, we were number 5
mm-hmm.
nationwide in terms of track mileage,
mm-hmm.
and that was statistics that were issued in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
But yet we were number 1 in terms of number of railroads in this state. So Pennsylvania is still a leader in terms of track mileage,
mm-hmm.
in terms of railroads, number of railroads operating in the state. And we're certainly a big employer as well.
Absolutely. When people go to your website, we've only got a minute left.
Correct.
But when you go to your website, it's www.rrmuseumpa.org. What can they expect to see? And can they get tickets for certain events?
Well, there are certainly, you can go to our website. You can look at the special events. And if there's something that you want to, if you want to get tickets, you can print out. You have to print out the form and send it in. But you can see certainly the dates for different events. We have information on some of the pieces in our collection. We have our hours and prices.
And what are your operating hours?
We're basically open right now, currently, until April, Tuesday through Saturday, 9 to 5,
mm-hmm.
Sunday, 12 to 5.
Excellent.
And then in April, we're open again on Mondays, and we'll be open then from Monday through Saturday, 9 to 5, Sunday, 12 to 5.
And by the way, just as a reminder, if anybody who wants to see the kind of Christmas display, that's this Saturday, and then that's the 3rd of December, and then the following Saturday, the 10th. And that would be a great thing to do. In fact, I think I might have to join you up there.
Excellent.
We're just about out of time, but Pat, thank you so much for being with us today on the show.
My pleasure.
Be sure to tune in next Wednesday, December 7th at 1 p.m. Eastern, when my friend Bruce Mowdy will be guest host, speaking with Chester County Supervisor Terrence Farrell. Thank you all for tuning in today to Living History.